Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Indaba Africa. This is Chris Wyatt coming to you once again from central Pennsylvania. My special guest today on a special feature program is Rene Kruger, a young South African who is steeped in Afrikaner culture, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today. So she's a young 23-year-old postgraduate student attending Northwest University in South Africa, and she's coming to us live from somewhere in South Africa with a beautiful day, it looks like, right there. How are you today, Rene?
I'm good, thank you, Chris, and how are you?
Well, I'm quite well, thank you. I should let people know up front a couple of things. Number one, folks must remember that English is not your first language, and so we want to make sure that I do have a habit of talking very fast. So if I get too fast for you, please just let me know. If you miss something I say, just ask me to slow down or go back to it. That's fine. I have a lot of guests whose first language is not English, but I seem to do okay, and your English seems much better than I think you believe it is, but we'll go from there. So could you tell us a little bit about yourself before we get started?
Okay, so you gave quite a good introduction there. I am a student and I love my culture. I'm very passionate about it. And I also believe that it is a God-given passion. It burns in my heart for my fatherland and my folk and also God. And I believe it's not out of my own human being. It's out of, it's from above.
So you're studying university. Oh, excuse me. Sorry, I got throat clear there. Well, before we actually get into that, I should make a couple of things I should say. The first is that when I put up the banner for the show, I put down Farm Girl. I put Boromaisi and then I put Farm Girl. And you and I spoke about that and you said, I think you thought that I was translating directly because those two words would translate that way. But I was looking at it personally from my view of I think I understand where you come from, and farming is a big part of who you are, even if you don't work on a farm or live on a farm, but it's a deep part of Afrikaans or Afrikaner culture. And so you made that point, but I think that's actually a very good point for those of us who are listening to the show not in South Africa. Maybe you can help explain the difference about a Boromaisi, Afrikaner, and what a farm girl, what we mean by that.
Okay, so the Afrikaans word for a farm girl would be a plaasmeisie, which is directly translated, and that is someone who lives on a farm and work on a farm and whatsoever. But a boeremeisie is more a term that takes a lot more into account. As you mentioned, farming is such an essential part of our culture and of who we are since the first day we got here in South Africa. And that is why you can call yourself a boeremeisie, even though you don't live on a farm or you didn't grow up on a farm. But in the incident of me, my parents do not farm, but my grandparents do, my uncle do, my other uncles do, my other grandparents, and also all my friends. And as you mentioned, it's such a big part of our culture. So ever since I was a young girl, the farm was my favorite place on earth, no matter where it is, and today still I can't deny it. I only want to be on the farm. I want to farm, and that is my dream for one day.
So what sort of farming would you like to do? Would it be cattle post, or would you be into vertical agriculture? What would you be interested in doing when you get to the farm?
No, I will be interested in cattle.
Yeah, well, I lived in Botswana, of course. It seems to be the dream of every government official and every officer in the Botswana Defense Force to retire to the cattle post and start a cattle ranch. That sort of cultural norm seems quite strong in groups in that part of the world.
Yes, it must be, but especially for Afrikaners or the boere, as we also refer to. Unfortunately, it's difficult to cherish that dream today with the political climate in South Africa. As most people are aware of by now, the farm murders are a sad reality, and also the cattle theft and the livestock theft and all the other challenges that farmers have to endure. But it didn't manage to scare me off of my dream, because it is a dream since I've been this small little girl. So
you mentioned cattle theft. In fact, I know in Botswana that's a big problem, especially from Zimbabwe, where people come across the border from Zimbabwe and steal cattle. And the way it works in Botswana is that because of foot and mouth disease, if they get to the border and cross with the cattle, the Botswana officials don't even bother trying to recover the cattle, because they don't want to infect their herds because foot and mouth is a problem in Zimbabwe. Is that a similar problem? Well, you're not, I believe you're in the Free State. I don't know where your grandparents' farm is, but that's not really on the border with Zimbabwe. But do you guys have a major problem with cattle theft? Because you mentioned it. It is a big problem in Botswana.
Yes, it is unfortunately a very big problem. And the underlying massive problem of that is that there's not much the farmers can do to protect them. You can't defend yourself or your cattle or your property anymore because the police is often part of this whole schemes to steal the livestock, and that's very sad. So there has been a couple of examples where people find the sheep that has been stolen in the back of a police van, and so it's difficult when you report this stuff. You don't always get people in the police who wants to help you. As you know, the police is also, you're not always, how can I put it? They are sometimes also drunk on the ideology of the government about the way they see farmers and the way they see that it's just white privilege and that they have the right to take our property.
So, Renee, let me get this straight. So you say sometimes when you're looking for your sheep and you report it to the police, you actually go to the police and people find their sheep in the back of the police vehicle because the police help steal them.
Yes, the police help steal them and they get a cut of it, and it's big syndicates and
Well, actually, yeah, that's we were I was we weren't going to get into that topic so early, but it's already there. In fact, I've seen video of some of the farm invasions that take place in South Africa. And you see people with very sophisticated equipment, body armor and night vision devices and automatic weapons and also radio jammers to block, calls for help and things like that. And yet we see the president of South Africa speaking before the United Nations saying there are no farm murders in South Africa, which, let's be honest, that's a ludicrous statement to begin with. There are farm murders in America. There are not many of them, but it's not for the same reasons, but there are farm murders all over the world. People who live in rural areas live in insecurity in many places in the world. So when he said that before the United Nations, my jaw just dropped. It's just absolutely crazy, particularly when I've seen these videos from surveillance footage of these organized syndicates that are breaking onto farms and torturing and murdering people and stealing things.
Yes, and that's very sad. We can talk a lot about it. It's not the best topic to discuss because it can sometimes make one feel hopeless, as you mentioned, because the president denies it, the government incites it in some way. So,
Well, let's shift right now to something a little happier, more interesting. Okay, so we'll get back to that subject if it comes back. Okay, but let's get on something more interesting. So you've done your undergraduate work, you graduated, you had an honors program, and now you're in a master's program, and you're studying a very interesting focus. Your focus, if I'm correct, is Afrikaner cultural tourism. Is that correct?
yes, that is the focus. It's also the creative cultural tourism aspect, but my heart focuses on Afrikaner culture. That is why I wanted to do this study. So yes, my aim with the study is actually to get the academics so that one day someone can develop such a place, or me myself can develop such a place where international tourists can come to experience Afrikaner culture. Like, there's a lot of cultural villages in South Africa, over 30, like Lesedi Cultural Village, Basotho Cultural Village, where people can come and experience these cultures. And there's not one such place where people can come to experience Afrikaner culture. There's different heritage sites for Afrikaner, but they are at different places in South Africa. And as you know, South Africa is very big, so tourists can't manage to get a holistic view of who the Afrikaner is and the heritage of the Afrikaner.
Looks like you've got some company behind you there. A couple of dogs have wandered up. So, no, that's interesting. Now I think I understand better. We spoke ahead of this call, and I didn't fully understand what you're getting at. But so, for instance, cultural sites are that are there. Or for instance, you have like the monument that's at Blood River. You have the Voortrekker Monument. These are clear Afrikaner symbols and tourist sites. But you're talking about something that focuses on the culture specifically. As I recall, at Blood River, there's a Zulu museum on the other side of the river, and I also went to that. And there's kind of a cultural village where they talk about what it's like to be a Zulu and how life is and how people lived it. Sounds like that's what you're talking about for your concept.
Yes, definitely. But I want to give tourists a holistic view that they can experience the whole of Afrikaans. And when you visit Blood River Museum, you only see that part of the Great Trek, or when you visit the concentration camp from the Anglo-Boer War, you only learn about that part. But with Cultural Village, I want them to experience the culture as it is today and also look back at the history and the traditions we have, the music we have, the dance we have. All those cultural elements must be incorporated so that the tourists can experience the best culture in the world.
So if you make a village like this, will it include a diorama of Kurt Derens dancing?
Maybe, yeah. Lessons for feet.
So you've also spent a little bit of time getting a little bit of experience around the tourism industry, because you'll, of course, have to be familiar with that. I think you worked as a hostess briefly. How was that experience?
No, it was good. It is interesting to see the international tourists so excited, and they see South Africa a lot differently than the people who actually live here. But yeah, I enjoy to help them understand who we are and to show them the side of the country, the Afrikaner side as well.
So one thing I noticed about a lot of folks in South Africa is they kind of become inured to things. I was on a trip to Africa from Paris once, and there were a bunch of South Africans with us, and some whites, a couple colored and black. And there were Americans asking, well, we're going to South Africa. We heard it's dangerous. What's it like? And I said to them, I said, no, South Africa is a wonderful place. You just have to be alert and know what's going on around you. And, you know, you should be fine. And the South African's like, no, there's no danger. This is nothing bad there. And then one person's like, well, this is where I was shot. And this is where I was carjacked. And when they broke into my home. My point is that you mentioned how people see South Africa differently. So clearly people inside South Africa see it one way, and the world outside sees it very differently.
Yes, and unfortunately that is changing now in a negative way. If you look at it, that tourists are becoming aware of the dangers in South Africa and they don't want to visit our country anymore. So that's negative for the tourism industry. But I also think more South Africans are becoming aware of the dangers. For a long time, it was like the South Africans were just being blind to the realities that's going on around them. But also, as you mentioned, I always say that if you are here, you adapt, and it's chaos, but you adapt. And then once you go out and you come back in, or you are looking from the outside, you are like, how did I survive? Or how does that people survive? And it seems terrifying, but it is unfortunately the terrifying stuff of living here in South Africa, but once you are here, you adapt and you trust in the Lord to protect you, and you just go on with your everyday life.
No, it's an absolutely amazing place. I mean, all the places I've been in South Africa, I've never been disappointed by the natural beauty, the people, the landscapes. It's always wonderful. What I also like about South Africans is South Africans have an interesting sense of humor. And it was that part of life growing up for you? I mean, have you been around people who were funny or had particular special type of humor?
Yes, definitely. That's so much part of our culture, storytelling especially. So you just, when you are young and you get the chance to be where your parents are, where the grown-ups are, you get this chance to hear all the stories, and you don't always catch the humor. But I remember our one uncle is very funny, but when we were small, we just didn't understand his humor, and we were scared of him because he always expected us to laugh, and we couldn't laugh because we didn't know what we were laughing at. And once we grew up, we understood his humor. So as you said, it's a special kind of humor, but it's definitely part of our culture, and it makes my heart feel warm when you are gathering around a braai vleis vuur, a barbecue, as you know it. And there's always a place for a little joke or a little story with humor in it.
Absolutely, no. It's one of the most interesting things I find about South Africans of all different groups. It's a South African sort of thing. It's not just an Afrikaner, but it's all over. So it's very fascinating. So in addition to also working as a
if I can add something to that, it's also a way of surviving in South Africa. As I mentioned, it is chaotic in many senses. But for example, I'm sure you are aware of load shedding. I don't know if all the listeners are aware of load shedding, but it's when our power distributor just decides that there's not enough electricity now, so it's just a blackout of for how many hours they decide. And anyway, I always thought that if that must happen somewhere else, they would like think it's the end of the world and whatever. And the way South Africans survive with that is just jokes. I mean, once there's something announced like that, it's just a matter of seconds, and there's like loads of jokes and memes about it. So yeah, our humor is definitely something to cherish if you want to survive in South Africa.
No, that's actually a good point. And since we're talking about farming and Afrikaner culture and life in South Africa, when I lived in Liberia, all of the electricity we had was provided by a 60 kW generator that the American Embassy ran, and it powered our apartments and the embassy compound 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we had reliable electricity. It was diesel, but it was very expensive. But outside the American Embassy, there was no electricity because during the Civil War, they destroyed all the power lines and the power stations. And so it was quite a mess. And people don't realize how big an impact when you don't have electricity it is.
Yes.
When I lived in Botswana had never had people having issues with electricity because they had produced about 25% of the electricity and the rest they bought from Eskom in South Africa. But then after 2000, because of the way that the Eskom state utility had been managed, they couldn't produce enough electricity. So when I arrived in Botswana, I had to come up with $25,000 to purchase a generator set up for my property. Now it didn't come out of my
Oh.
pocket. My government paid for it. But my point about that is that what an incredibly difficult situation if you need power. Say you run a dairy farm, you have to milk your cows. You can't show up with 50 people just to milk cows by hand. So you have to rely on your own sources of power. Is that a common thing on the farms? Do you guys rely on solar or wind power or something like that so you have electricity?
Yes, it's becoming increasingly, it's an increasing tendency that farmers do use alternative energy. But there's also challenges with that, unfortunately, and this makes me very sad. For example, at my grandparents' farm, a few farmers wanted to cash in for a, what do you call it, hydraulic system because there's a river near their farm. And then the government also said they are not allowed to do that because they will still have to pay for the power because it's their river. So even though they were willing to pay to take all the costs on them to what do you call it, erect this thing, they weren't allowed to because they said they were still going to have to pay every day for the water going through the system and whatever. So yeah, there's also difficulties getting solar systems, and yeah, they make it very difficult for us. But there's a lot of people who has generators, but unfortunately, not everyone can afford it. I mean, it's very expensive with the diesel and the especially with the price in our country. So it's a big challenge.
Now that's absolutely crazy. So if I understood you correctly, they were willing to pay to build the hydroelectric system so that they could get power from a creek or a river or stream nearby, and the government demanded that they still pay for the water and also for electricity on top of them providing their own electricity. Well, you got to wonder about
Yeah.
that. That's just absolutely bizarre. It sounds like somebody's just trying to get their hands in the till, if you ask me, but I wasn't there. I'm just assuming. So you also worked in a game reserve, if I understand, briefly. How was that, and what did you do there? What did you learn about the tourism industry? Was it high-end tourism? Was it a game reserve? I mean, with hunting or just tourism viewing animals? What was it?
It was mostly view it's mostly viewing orientated, but I was there for a specific event, and it was a horse endurance event. So I helped with the tourists and taking their horses from the to the veterinary area and to where they finish the race and etc. So I could communicate with the tourists, and yeah, it was very interesting, and I enjoyed it very much.
So when I first put the banner up, I put up, I think I put up Afrikaans culture. And you asked me, could we change that to Afrikaner culture? And I think that's an important distinction. So could you explain to folks what the distinction is between the way I wrote that and why you asked me to change it?
Yes, so many people, even in the Afrikaner culture, many people use the word as Afrikaner culture as if it is a culture, and it is a language, and it's a precious part of our culture, but it is not our culture entirely. So the problem I have with that is, for example, with my study, if I want to focus on the Afrikaner culture, I can't. The people always say, but what about these ethnic groups and these ethnic groups, because they also speak Afrikaans. And it's true, there's a lot of Afrikaans speakers who doesn't have my skin color. And I wanted to focus on the Afrikaner culture with our unique heritage and etc. So that's why I asked you to change it, because there's a misunderstanding when people refer to the Afrikaans culture. There's not an Afrikaans culture, there's an Afrikaans language, and the Afrikaner people speak it, but there's also a lot of other groups who speaks it.
No, absolutely. And for folks outside South Africa, a lot of people don't realize, like, for instance, in South Africa, about 5.8 million mixed race or colored South Africans speak Afrikaans, actually the largest group of people who first language speak it. Then you have about 2.5 million white South Africans whose first language is Afrikaans. You have about 190,000 black Africans whose first language is Afrikaans. I don't think many people actually know that. And I think it's about 280 or 300,000 Indians who actually their first language is Afrikaans, which surprises a lot of people. But yes, it's a good point, and thank you for making that distinction. I certainly didn't want to confuse the issue, but that is a good point. But when you think in your own language, sometimes you make mistakes. So for instance, English is my mother tongue, but I'm not English. Well, maybe 400 years ago, but not today. Of course, and when you say English to England, you're talking about the language and also the people and the culture. So English culture. So that's how it's easy for folks when it's. But yeah, you're absolutely correct. Afrikaner vice Afrikaans. No, I think it's an important distinction. So growing up, of course, you grew up speaking Afrikaans. That's your first language. When did you start learning a second language? Was it English when you went to primary school, or what was it?
Yes, it was English, but I also had English friends when I was very little. We lived in a town that were quite there were English schools, and so in the Eastern Cape there's still parts that are English orientated. So I had English friends since I was small, but a lot of people don't know this, but when I was grade 6 and grade 7, we moved to England, our family. And then we had to learn English very quickly. And I remember in the evenings when we had to bath, my mother was speaking English to us, and we were three sisters, and the three sisters, we were sitting there bathing or wherever, and we had to speak English, and we didn't like it at all because we didn't understand. And then when we arrived in England, my mother's exercises didn't help a lot because they have such an accent and such a dialect they're talking, we didn't understand anything anyway. But I was thrown in the deep side, and I had to learn English. And then when we moved back, we lived probably in the most Afrikaans town in South Africa. So I only spoke English twice a year when I had to do an English oral in English class. And then at university, I had the privilege to also still study in Afrikaans, and I didn't have to speak English a lot. So then my English just went back, backwards. So that's why I'm still struggling.
That's the thing, though. Language is really like a muscle, isn't it? It's kind of like doing physical fitness. If you don't use it, you kind of lose it. So you've got to practice it. Trust me, I know. I speak degrees of proficiency, six languages, and it's hard to keep those things in your head and keep them up. And so I don't do a very good job with a few of them. But what was the most frustrating thing for you when it came to learning English? Obviously, maybe being thrown in the deep end and showing up in England, rocking up in England was probably like, what's going on here? Was that the most challenging, or was there another aspect of learning English?
No, I would say to arrive in England, and also because our attitude wasn't best arriving in England, because we didn't want to go. So it was like a bit of a rebellious side. We didn't want to speak English, but we had to. So I don't know, but it's just difficult. Still today it's difficult for me, because a lot of learning material, as I do my study now, and also in my previous degrees, there's a lot of study material in English, and I just never were able to learn in English. I had to translate it for myself the whole time. So you can't think in another language than your home language, I think.
No, I get your point. It can be challenging. So a lot of people in South Africa are always like, well, white South Africans must learn an African language, must learn an African language. In my personal experience, most Boers and most farmers, especially, but certainly a lot of Afrikaners, but certainly most farmers do speak an African language, either Zulu or Xhosa or Tswana, because they have people who work on their farms and around them and they interact with them. And so is that your experience? And do you know any African languages beyond Afrikaans, or?
Yes, so it's true what you say. Definitely the farmers, 90% of the farmers I know can speak an African language and they speak to their workers like that. And then the other half or the other 10% that I know, when the workers can also speak Afrikaans, the farmer has this special type of way speaking to them so that they would still understand. It's not like I would speak Afrikaans to my friend. They speak like, I don't know how to explain it, but they speak Afrikaans, but in the they structure their sentences as the way the other people do it in their languages so that they could understand it better. And to answer the question about whether I know another African language, I recently started learning Sotho, and here where I am at the moment, here's a lady who speaks Sotho, and it's great to see what it does to someone when you show them you are trying to learn their language. It really touches your heart. So she's like all on board and she wants to teach me new words every day. And I'm just like, whoa, not too fast. So I'm a bit of a slow learner now, I think, because I can speak a bit of German as well. And yeah, as you say, I think one's head becomes a bit of slow when it comes to the fourth language. So yes, and then sorry, just to get back to the other question about the challenge of Afrikaans to English, it's something I must mention. I always say you can't say what you want to say in Afrikaans in English because what do you call it? I don't even know if there's an English word for it because maybe you would know for kleinwoorde. Like when you say it's a dog and you say it's a hond. You say it's a winky, and yeah, well, in English you can say that's a doggy, but it's not that. There's a verkleinwoordjie for everything in Afrikaans. You can put everything in Afrikaans in verkleinwoordjies, and you can't in English. So that was very difficult for me because if you want to express emotion like that's so cute, you have to say, look at that cute tiny little thing. But in Afrikaans you can just put the plain work is at the end.
No, absolutely. So using the diminutive there, German's similar, as you know. It's you can you, if you don't know a word in German, you can just make one up. Just throw a couple nouns together, and people understand what you're saying. That doesn't work in English. Though I get what your point. Some of the folks in the chat are talking about their own ability to speak. Grant is saying that he speaks Zulu and Xhosa, and then Dagaboy said he started learning Chichewa, which of course is spoken in Malawi and in parts of Zambia. I too was learning Chichewa about 12 years ago, but was so busy that I didn't get very far in it. So I abandoned my studies of Chichewa because I really can't use it outside Zambia or Malawi. It doesn't really help me much in the world. But anyway, so yeah, no, that's interesting about the language. But I think it's important for people to know because I really get. Okay, well, here. When it comes to languages, the pronunciation can be challenging too. For non-Afrikaans first language speakers, speaking Afrikaans can be quite a challenge. I can understand it, I can read it, I can listen to it, I can watch Egoli, I can watch Steven Delan and understand the programs and watch movies and such. And I can even understand Snokkop's lyrics. I have to look at them, but I can understand them and I can listen. But speaking it, so I always get mistaken for being an Afrikaner. And of course, that was even before I grew the Piet Retief beard here, or the Oom Paul Kruger look I've got going there. But it's so, in fact, once I was in Mozambique and they insisted that I was an Afrikaner. In fact, they called me an Afrikaner. And I showed them an American diplomatic passport and they said, no, you're an Afrikaner. I'm like, no, I'm not. But my most famous sense, of course, in Afrikaans is Ek praat nie Afrikaans nie. That's pretty much what I say because because people will just when I understand them then they just start going off in Afrikaans. So kind of like the lady who's trying to help you with Sotho, she's like, oh, you want to learn it, so I'm going to help you learn it instantly. It doesn't quite work that way, does it?
No, and also, I'm sorry I'm laughing at your pronunciation, but that's also a thing unique of our culture. Other people would just really have patience with you, and they would never laugh if you pronounce English words wrongly. But when you pronounce Afrikaans words wrongly, Afrikaans people would laugh at you. But it's not out of disrespect. It's just that humor we talked about earlier. It's just it's actually more like a precious type of laugh. Like it's a precious moment, and that's why we laugh. It's not because we are disrespectful.
No, and I don't take it that way. It's actually funny with my subscribers who and my viewers who watch the program, because it's now a bit of a running joke with my horrible pronunciation of the Afrikaans G. And so, like, when you have Afrikaners who have names like Gerhard, which is a German name. So Gerhard, and that's how you pronounce it in German. So I pronounce it like that, and they kind of laugh. So and Ronaldo Hose gave me you see, I said that wrong. Gave me a hard time about it on his program. So now I make a point whenever I say Ronaldo Hose, or when I say I'm hotful, I just make sure that I kind of do that, and people seem to be getting a kick out of it. So no, I don't take it. But people not accustomed to Afrikaners might be taken aback because they don't understand the humor. But no, I do appreciate that. It is interesting. But listen, I hope you appreciate, Renee, pronouncing your language is not easy.
Okay, well, I hope it stays a challenge that you keep practicing it, and then you can also practice grillerige gogga. So that's like a nightmare for non-Afrikaners because it's so many G's and R's. But it just means it's a gross insect. But you can practice that. If you can say grillerige gogga, then you can speak Afrikaans.
Now these guys are—they're having fun with me now in the chat. Someone says because they like the way I say this, or they find it funny. They want me to say Franzhoch.
Oh,
But that's not how I usually
true.
say it. Now that they put me on the spot, and I just said it like it's not quite the way I say it. Anyway, somebody says I look very Afrikaans. I think they mean I look like an Afrikaner. So I've corrected them. Yes, Renee?
No, I say they didn't listen, but yeah, I must say I like your beard, and I also had a comment when I showed who I'm going to speak to today. They were like, "Oh, he looks like Paul Kruger," so I think that you can take that as a big compliment.
No, absolutely, I did. So, listen, one of the reasons why I asked you to come on, Renee, is because I'm trying to get all kinds of interesting guests, and I think you've been very fascinating so far. So, thank you for that. But I also want to get, like a lot of people who do YouTubing, you just start asking people, and for some reason, if you don't pay attention, suddenly all your guests are men. And there's nothing wrong with having men as guests, but men and women are different, despite what the political left tries to tell us that we're all the same. There's no X and Y chromosome. Everyone can do, Men and women are different. And yes, there are stereotypes, but those stereotypes are based in reality in many respects. My point being is that one stereotype about women is they're much more measured and more calm when it comes to talking about sensitive issues or things that are emotional. So I did want to get women on my program. And fortunately, I got Giselle, who's the Namibian singer who sings in Afrikaans. She's brilliant, by the way. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to her. But she was on my program Saturday. I've got you on today. And then later this week, I have a Nigerian American lady who's a big wig in business. She's very well acquainted with Walmart and Whirlpool. And she runs her own business. She's a serial entrepreneur. So I'm getting more women on the program. So that's one of the reasons why I voted you, or not voted you. I didn't vote you. I was like Fantasy Island here. I voted you on. No, it's one of the reasons why I asked you to come on the program. So what do you think of that? Would you agree that men and women look at things differently, perhaps? And maybe you can give a different perspective of life for Afrikaners in South Africa than, say, maybe if I have a bunch of male guests on.
Yes, definitely. I think women just have a more sensitive way of putting things, or a softer way of putting things, and you're also a more vulnerable way of looking at things. So men would maybe be more willing to go into a fight or to see fighting as an option, and the woman's vulnerability shows something about the reality also in South Africa. And it just slipped my mind what was the other thing I just wanted to say, but it will come back to me later. But I enjoy being on your show, so I'm glad you're going to have other women as well, and I definitely appreciate men being leaders. But unfortunately, these days it feels as if men just denies that position in life to be the leader, because, as you say, the left doesn't like that. And now women are trying to be leaders, and that is just confusing. And but I will be a leader if there's not another leader, but I will be a follower when there is a good leader. And also, I don't think men always put it. They don't put stuff so completely out there, as if I can put it that way. So women talk more. So, for example, even though it can be true in the case of other Afrikaners speaking out, they don't always put it that way. So I would like to use this opportunity to put it out there that whenever I speak about my culture, I speak out of love for my own, and never out of hate for others or out of thinking less of others. It's always just out of love for my own.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That's actually, I think, a very important distinction, especially in the South African context, where people in certain political parties are racializing every aspect of life, needlessly and pointlessly. It can be very frustrating, I imagine, as a South African, especially as an Afrikaner, if you want to celebrate your culture and experience it when other cultures are allowed to experience and celebrate their culture. But when you do it, people look at you as if you're wrong, or even call Afrikaners racist simply for speaking their language or for engaging in cultural activities that are common. That must be very frustrating.
Yes, it is the most frustrating thing ever. And what is even more frustrating is that there's Afrikaners who starts to believe this thing as well. There's Afrikaners who starts to believe, well, I should feel guilty that I'm an Afrikaner and that I'm speaking Afrikaans and that I like Afrikaans music or whatever, and I should just keep my distance from all of these things. And the reason for this is also because Afrikaners do not have the opportunity to learn about their heritage anymore. It is taken out of the school curriculum, and knowledge definitely fuels passion. So I had to study the Afrikaner history myself because I couldn't, it wasn't in the curriculum on, at school. And once I learned all this stuff, my passion just grew stronger for my culture. And yeah, that is absent at many. With in the case of many Afrikaners, because they don't have that knowledge, because they don't have the opportunity to learn about that stuff. And when there's opportunities, they rather distance themselves because, as you just mentioned, it's racialized and it's seen as racist or whatever.
No, it's really sad. It's interesting for me because as an American who's never lived in South Africa, but of course I've been there many, many times and lived right next to it in Gaborone, and so I was quite frequently in Northwest and in Gauteng, but among other places. But for me, a lot of people in South Africa who discover my channel and listen to my streams or my prepared videos, they come back and they're Afrikaners, many of them, not just, but many of them are Afrikaners. They're like, well, I didn't know this about my culture and heritage. And I'm just aghast and astounded that, of course, to be fair, I am a historian and a political scientist, so I probably know more about a lot of things than the average person when it comes to that. But nonetheless, some of the things I think are quite basic about Afrikaner history and the Boers and the Great Trek and the history of settling Africa seems to be lost on a lot of people. And I can only surmise that this is being neglected in public schools and not being taught in the home so that people don't know it anymore. What do you think of that? Is that probably accurate, or am I wrong?
No, that is completely accurate. And the other thing is, the older generation don't know that they should pass this on to their children because they could learn it at school, and they don't always realize that the reality is that your children is not allowed to learn it at school anymore, and they are just taught that you are wrong and you are guilty and whatever. So the parents also don't know that this is now their responsibility to actively invest in their children's lives by sharing this information, this crucial information, because without this information, you will just fall for the lies that is thrown at you the whole time in mainstream media, with the political parties, and just in everyday life.
Well, the birds in the background are singing quite nice now. They're adding a nice ambiance to the chat, so I'm really enjoying that. You've got some interesting birds in the background there. Now, one of the people in the chat, Daga Boy, you don't have to answer the question, but if you'd like to, you're welcome to it. Daga Boy said, Renee, have you ever been to, he says, Potch, so Potchefstroom. I swear I've seen her before. Like he thinks he's seen you.
Well, I study there, so it's definitely possible.
Yes, he studies at university there. So we mentioned that at the beginning of the show. Folks, bear in mind that some people come to the stream late, some come and go. And so some of the things we cover in the beginning, it's not everybody that stays. Also, very quickly, just let me take a little housekeeping moment here, Renee. So, folks, you're listening to Indaba Africa. This is Chris Wyatt coming to you from Central Pennsylvania. My special feature guest today is Renee Kruger, a young South African who is very proud of her cultural history as an Afrikaner. And we're talking a little bit about that. We've touched on the subject of Boeromycete and what that is, and what it's like being on a farm in South Africa, and her studies, what she's doing, her postgraduate program. So you're listening to Indaba Africa. Anyway, back to the story here. So Renee, let me ask you another question here very quickly. So you have your own YouTube channel, and that's how I found out about you, to be honest. I think you and I have talked about that. What happened is that I was looking for something and I came across a video and I saw a view and I went and listened to it. Actually, I saw the Afrikaans video first and I struggled. I couldn't keep up entirely, even though your Afrikaans is quite clear. It's not difficult. But some of those folks, when I get out northwest or in Mpumalanga on the farm, I'm like, what did he say? But no. But yours is actually pretty clear, so I can keep up for the most part. As long as you don't do a bunch of G words in a row, I'm okay. But I found your channel and I saw the Afrikaans. I watched it, so I was intrigued. And I saw you had an English channel. You don't do a lot of videos on there, but the videos you do are quite good quality, I must say. What gave you the motivation, or why did you start doing the YouTube channel? And are you still active on it? Because I don't see a lot of videos on there.
Okay, so yes, I am still active. Well, it depends what you see as active. Active is I still have an account, and I when something is pressed on my heart, I make a video about it. So that is the difference. I don't want to make videos, say for instance, make a video every week, and then it's just something that comes out of the mind or what I had to write or think out or that I react on emotions, which is often angry emotions when you look at the political climate in our country. I rather want to make quality videos, as you mentioned, but videos that has a message, that has a few messages maybe, and that comes out of the heart. So yes, I'm still active. And what motivated me is Nampu. I don't know if you know Nampu, but it is an agricultural show, agricultural festival. I'm not sure what to call it, but yeah, it is this. No, it's in May. It's in May normally without this lockdown stuff. But yeah, so in 2018 at Nampu, I went there and I saw there's walls with all the names of the people that was murdered on their farms, and it just hit me again. So since I was a little girl, I had this love and passion for my culture and my country, and yeah, just for my language and my heritage since I was a little girl. So I always cherished that. But then I always distanced myself from the news, because when I see news, it upsets me a lot, like more than the average person. So yeah, but anyway, back to Nampu. So at Nampu, I saw this walls of all the names, and it hit me again, and it just broke my heart again. And then this is what always happens when I watch news once in a while, when I distance myself from it. So then I just cried one evening, and I was very sad about it. And then I had the opportunity with someone who already makes videos, who told me that I should make a video. And yeah, it seemed like an answer from God, as I was in prayer while crying, to find a way to just shed light on the dark truths, because you feel hopeless, or what is the word? Powerless. You feel as if you can't do anything in this situation, because then this insane incident happens. For instance, with the Varsity Cup rugby, you're also a rugby lover. That one year, it was in 2016, I think. I don't know if you would remember, there was this riot again about I don't know what, and the people broke the fences and went onto the rugby field and just disrupted the whole game and started attacking the players and whatever. And it upset me so much, and I was like, what? But this is going to go out to the world. And when I searched it, I just saw, I can't even remember what the headline was, but all the mainstream media stuff out there in the world was like the opposite of what happened, and it just portrayed us as the bad guys once again. And I realized that, yeah, the truth doesn't get out there. So that is what motivated me. And I started to actually make these videos to raise awareness about the farm murders. But luckily, there's also other people who tries to do this, so that is why I also make different videos now, and videos out of the heart to tell people who the Afrikaner is and what's going on here, and also the Afrikaans channel to tell the Afrikaner people about who you are, because as I mentioned, that is the biggest problem. The Afrikaners themselves don't know who they are anymore.
Well, actually, I think that's a very good point, Renee, that you make. One of the things I talk about here in America is because we don't have a national language. English is not our national language, although it in practice has been throughout our history. In fact, here where I live in Pennsylvania, about 65% of the population, almost 70%, spoke German when this became a state at the end of the colonial period. And so the country was actually debating about whether it should be German or English should be our language. But we chose English, and so we went with that. So But we have a lot of people who come to this country, and of course, they make an effort to learn English and become Americans, accept our values, and contribute to our culture, a kaleidoscope of offering different things, whether it's Germans with kindergarten and schnitzel and decent beer, as opposed to American beer, which is terrible. Or it's Mexicans who come with amazing food and bring siestas and different things to our culture. But we get people who've come recent immigrants to America, and they don't take the time to learn language, or they think that they're being imposed upon. And what I tell people is that the thing is that if culture is important to you, it's up to the parents to inculcate that into their children, into their progeny. Your culture survives. So, for instance, in America, we have about 750,000, 800,000 Amish and Mennonites who are German and Swiss in origin. And many of them, the Amish especially, their first language is actually German. It's 17th century German, so I have to listen very carefully when I talk to them in German, because that's German from 300 years ago, and it hasn't changed much for them because it's right out of the German Bible that they have from back then. But it's up to family to inculcate faith, if you want to, and culture. It sounds like you agree with that concept, that it's up to the family to do it, especially in South Africa today, where Afrikaner culture is being excluded from the public scene so frequently.
Yes, it's definitely the case. But as I mentioned, it hasn't been that way for Afrikaners always, because you had the opportunity to engage in all of this cultural activities and nationalism and everything. But yeah, so now the older generations don't necessarily know that they should actively invest in this in the family. But it is definitely the core of it, and therefore I'm thankful, because therefore our culture is still alive, and you can really see it. We visited someone just last week on a farm, another farmer doing great work with what do you call it, conservation farming, and he has four little daughters, and it was just so cute to see it again. And that is nice. That is precious of culture, when you go and you meet strangers, and within the first 5 minutes it feels as if they are family, and you can just kuier there. That's the Afrikaans word, and I couldn't find a word in English for that to describe it so nicely, when you go visit someone. But yeah, the word kuier, I don't know if you know the word kuier, but it just says so much more. But anyway, it's like a warm visiting word, and yeah, just feeling so at home, because it reminded me of my family and the way they discipline their children, and the way the daughters are so cute, and they just want to go out with their father to the little calves, and they just want to pet the calves, and they want to see, and they want to taste the maize on the fields and whatever. So yeah, it is precious to see. That is why it is still alive, the way you speak to your children in your language, the way you just live your tradition, your culture every day.
Well, Renee, it's always amazing how when you're having an interesting conversation with someone who's also interesting, that the time just flies by. We're down the last 10 minutes here of the hour here, so just a couple more things to mention before we run out of time, because I know you've got other things to do. You're busy there on a farm, and I know what it's like being on a farm. The work doesn't go away; it just piles up on a farm. So lots to do. I was on a dairy
Indeed.
farm as a youth, a dairy farm. I ran it, and so I milked the cows at 5 o'clock in the morning and 5:30 every night. And people don't know that that's
Wow.
a 365 days a year job. There's no vacations, there's no holidays. You can't leave the cows unmilked. They get sick and die. So it's really it's a
Yes.
full-time thing. So let me we talked just briefly about this, but you were talking about how things get taken out of context and distorted when you bring things up. I remember was it last year or the year before that there was a big demonstration organized. I don't know if Afri Forum had a role in it, but certainly someone did, in which people were protesting against the farm murders, and they wore black, and they were long convoys on the roads. And SABC and the South African media covered this in a horrific light. They were totally disingenuous about this. They also, from what I saw, portrayed it as a whites-only sort of thing, and it wasn't that at all. I saw a lot of colored South Africans who participated in these convoys, and as I recall, this was simply an effort to draw attention to the fact that people were being killed on farms. And maybe you can talk a little bit about this, but one of the things that disturbs me is that the media always like to default to say they talk about white South African farmers, and then that's it. And it's horrible what's happening to white South African farmers, but they're not the only people being murdered in the rural areas. On farms, colored farm workers and black South Africans who work on the farms are also being murdered by these syndicates and criminals. Am I accurate? Would I say is all that true, or did I get something wrong?
It is true, but it is not. It's not in the most cases like that. In the most cases, it is, as you know, the form of murders is targeted murders. It's hate crimes. It is not just normal murders or wanting to steal stuff. So, in most cases, it is our people that is targeted. But there's also cases where the other people, as you mentioned, the workers are also targeted and attacked.
Well, I don't want to end our conversation on the discussion about that because that's a very sad, tragic part of South Africa. And unfortunately, that's part of life for Afrikaner farmers. And it's really tragic. And it's been going on for a very long time. Even before 94, it was happening, which a lot of people don't realize. People talk about farm murder since 94, but this has been going on for far longer than that. And for the roadies in the crowd, I know we have some Rhodesians who live in South Africa and around the world who listen to my stream. They can attest to this too, going back to the 1960s when farmers were being murdered, particularly on the borderlands with Zambia and with Mozambique. But let me ask you a couple more questions before we get out of this here. I think we talked about this yesterday, and I was saying that someone was asking a question on one of the channels I was watching, and they asked why most people on YouTube seem to be white South Africans. And I said it probably has something to do with the fact that the data is so expensive and internet connection is so unreliable that most South Africans don't use a laptop or a PC to access the internet when we're talking about sheer numbers. Most are people who don't have a lot of money and tend to use their mobile phones, and so Twitter is so popular because you use almost no data. And did you want to talk about that a little bit? I think we kind of discussed it.
life is like a pendulum, and as soon as everything is going to the one side, it just wants to swing back to the other side. So even though there is truth in the statement that you said, I just want to swing it to the other side as well, that the statement that you made may initiate that the black South Africans do not have data or cannot afford it. And I do not like that statement because there's this whole idea that there exists something like white privilege, and there's not such a thing in South Africa anymore. I strongly disagree with that statement because everywhere you go, you actually experience this privilege. You are last on the list for a job application, for to go and study. As many people might not know, for example, if your skin color is mine, you need like 90% to go study medics. But when you have another skin color, you need like 60% average to go and study it. So there's a lot of disprivilege, and therefore I wouldn't say that is the main reason why it is white South Africans speaking out. I would say that it is what do you call it? In the dark times, the stars come out. That seems put wrongly, but what I'm trying to say is that the people who's being oppressed at the moment is the people who wants to speak out, and the people who's not heard by the mainstream media is the people who wants to speak out. So YouTube is an alternative way for to speaking out for Afrikaners. The other people are heard quite enough with mainstream media and with the one-sided news always going out. So they don't really need YouTube to speak out, but we do because there's a lot of injustices that's targeted towards us. So that is why I would say Afrikaners are the ones speaking out mostly at the moment.
No, that's brilliant. I like that explanation, and it goes a long way. Well, and I certainly didn't mean to imply, and I wasn't. I don't think you're saying that it was, but I didn't mean to imply that like there's no black Africans money. There is a very large, ultra-rich, nouveau riche community of black Africans, ANC cadres who are affiliated with the party, who seem to have done quite well under the new dispensation. Cyril Ramaphosa is worth $450 million, for example. Tokyo Sekhwale. Patrice Modise, the list goes on and on. And those are the ones we know about. But there's a very large number of very wealthy black South Africans. So, no, I just in sheer numbers I was talking about because people tend to use their mobiles a lot because it's more effective. And so Twitter doesn't need much data. But no, I think this is fantastic. I really like the way you talked about how the stars come out. That's a beautiful way to say that. That's quite nice. So before we close, because we're down to just the last couple minutes here, Renee. What is it that really gets you excited and motivated? And if you'd like, you can tell us what concerns you. Although I think we might have covered the things that concern you, but really, what really gets you excited? Because we're about to close out here, and I want to leave on a good note if we can.
Yeah, so just to sum up, what worries me is definitely all the political climate stuff, all the incitement that there is, targeted towards my people. That's what worries me most. And then also that my people are just lying towards this, that they don't know what the truth is anymore. But what gets me excited is a lot. We need another hour for that. But if I could sum it up, I love my culture. I cherish it. I cherish every moment of it, every spontaneous moment of it. So my language, just the way that I can put myself out there in my language, is like 90% better than in English. And also the traditions we have, the traditional dance we have to Sokki, I love that. I love the way that that family is very important to Afrikaners and respectful for all the people. So if you were Afrikaans, I would definitely call you Oom Chris, meaning Uncle Chris. So yeah, and I actually read about that recently, that where that comes from is with the Great Trek, and also with the Anglo-Boer War, where people, where families were devastated and people had to move and live with friends, and they had to live with friends and the other people looked after them. They literally became like family, and that is where the whole thing came from, where Afrikaners call everyone that's older than them women tani, uncle and auntie. So, but anyway, and yeah, so my eyes are just open to appreciate all the unique things of my culture, and I would love for everyone to love their culture. I'm not saying they should all love my culture, but I think it's good if you can love your culture and if you enjoy associating with your own people, because I think that is a blessing from God. So yes, and with open eyes, I see a lot of things, just an old bunny with a warm hug and always nice cook sisters to give you that sweet treat we have here in South Africa. And there's so many stuff, but yeah, our history is precious. So like when Paul Creer, your lookalike, said, that you should take what is good out of the past and build the future on it. So that also gets me excited. Afrikaner always stood up out of the ashes. They always had hope. And yes, that is also what I want to stand for, if I can, is to just bring a little bit of hope to remind people who we are and to focus on the good elements of our culture.
Well, Renee, thank you so much. Baie dankie. That's very nice of you. Es war sehr nett. Es war ausgezeichnet. Also für mich persönlich, also das hat mir, also das war, also ja, genug. Yeah, no, I was trying to think I wanted to say in German, but yeah, you said you understood some German, so I figured you could keep up there. But thank you. You've been a fantastic guest. And you're not going to believe this, but we've just peaked at viewers. Now people are tuning in after the hour. This is what always happens. But we're going to end here in just a moment. I want to thank Renee for being my guest on today's special feature. It's very kind of her to take some time out there on the farm to spend some time with us and share her views about Afrikaner culture. And we didn't really talk about Afrikaans as a language, but perhaps I can get you back on it as a guest at some point. We can talk more about that if you'd like. You don't have to commit now, but we can discuss it later if you're interested. But I want to thank you for coming on. And is there any last thing you'd like to say? But before we go, before I do that, after you finish, I'm going to wrap up, and then you and I are going to drop off the screen. And ladies and gentlemen, I have a treat for you as usual. Of course, you know, I have the permission and rights to play Giselle's music. So I will be playing Fitlands Mensa, which to me is kind of an anthem for the Afrikaans language and for Afrikaners. And so I think you'll enjoy that on the way out. So that'll be what you hear on the way out. You're welcome to stay and listen to that music video and watch it. But in the meantime, any last comments or words you'd like to share with us, Renee?
No, thank you. I enjoyed our conversation a lot. I think we talked about a lot of stuff and it was very shortly, but I enjoyed it very much. So thank you, Chris. And thank you for your concerns and your efforts to also tell people more about us and to get me on the show so I have an opportunity to also tell more people about the Afrikaner culture. I really enjoyed it and I hope to speak to you soon again. And thank you for all the listeners or watchers. I enjoyed your questions as well.
Ach, Mensch, ist ja kaum zu glauben. Yeah, we've just went up higher on viewers and we're not staying, folks. You're going to have to watch the replay. But one thing I would like to talk about in the future, if you're interested, is faith. We didn't really talk about religion today, and I know that plays a very strong role in the Afrikaner community. So maybe we can save that for a future discussion.
Yeah, thank you. I would enjoy that.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've been tuned in to Indaba Africa. This is Chris Wyatt here in central Pennsylvania, not in Africa. I'm not currently living in Africa, though I spent most of the last 20 years there. But my special guest today on the special feature has been Renee Krueger. You see her there on the screen. And I'm going to thank her yet again. Thank you, Renee. Appreciate you being a wonderful guest on here. We're going to go ahead and close out now with Giselle's Fitlands Mensa. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I produced three videos today, one on Germany and the member of the left who claims that racism can't happen to Germans. And you'll see my video refuting that nonsense. And also, I did one on Botswana, the reopening of schools there. They seem to have their act a little bit better together than South Africa's education minister, Angie, who seems confused about what's happening in the schools there, even though she's the minister of education. And finally, I did a third one. I can't even remember. Oh, I was talking about Ramaphosa and his comments. But what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take off and we're going to play music. So thank you all so much for tuning in. It's been a pleasure having you today. And everyone have a pleasant day. I'm sorry, I'm working with the software here and not getting right. Okay, so Renee, I'm going to wave goodbye to you. Thank you so much for being a guest on here. And we'll catch you next time and have a good day. Stay on the line and I'll chat with you as soon as this is off, okay?
Okay.
Met raad en saam, met leiding en hoop, verdriet en saam staan jy strak. Jy is altyd daar. Dit wat ons doen, ons liefdes, ons vreugdes, ons plekke, ons thuistes, tot daar waar ons reis, jy is daar. Afrikaans is ons wese. Dis die taal waarin ons groet, die taal is in ons bloed, is Afrikaans vir ons mense. Hier ek stuur vir jou een sein, met die boodskap daarby en waar jy is, sal jy dit kry, in Afrikaans vir ons mense. Ons kultuur, ons verhaal, dit sal altyd bestaan. Afrikaans is ons wese. Dis die taal waarin ons groet, die taal is in ons bloed, is Afrikaans vir ons mense. En ek stuur vir jou een sein, met die boodskap daarby en waar jy is. Gebore, die taal wat voor ons staan, dit vloei door ons aarde, ons kinders praat het saam, dit sal altyd bestaan. Afrikaans is ons wese. Dis die taal waarin ons groet, die taal is in ons bloed, is Afrikaans vir ons mense.